This is the Rona Roundtable with Rick Rao,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, the 23rd day of August, the year 2014. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Richard Pollock is away this week, vacationing, I believe, in beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us in the second hour in about 75 minutes time, give or take, David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News is going to join us to talk about the Sharks, their off season. They just stripped Joe Thornton of their captaincy. In my humble opinion, the San Jose Sharks are a bit of a mess. We'll talk to David Pollock about that in the second hour. Also on today's show, we'll talk about changes to the NHL draft lottery. Some news from the Ottawa Senators camp. They signed Clark MacArthur to a contract extension. And Jason Spezza spoke to the Ottawa media for the first time since being traded earlier this summer. We'll bring that to you during the show as well. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to the man on my left, Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy, good morning. Good seeing you.
Yeah, what's going on? Are you dry?
Am I dry? Oh, like my house?
Well, just in general. I mean, it's been raining a lot. It's drizzling a little bit. As I was driving in, you know, it was drizzling a little bit. I know, Richie's mom, her house had a lot of water. I was helping them out yesterday. I know I saw rumors was unfortunately having a little water, but I just want to know if you're dry, if
people are dry out there. I live on the second and third floor, so it would be a lot of water if I got some water in my house. So I'm fortunate. One of the advantages of living on the second and third floor is you generally don't have to worry about having water backup problems. But, of course, our thoughts go out to anybody who was affected by that one-in-100-year flood, or rainstorm, rather, as they said on the front page of today's Winnipeg Free Press. It seems like maybe it's just me, and I'll take the meteorologists or the Environment Canada people's word for it, because they know a lot more than I do. But it seems like we have a lot of 1-in-100-year rainstorms lately, but that just could be. That's just anecdotal as opposed to based on any evidence.
They should just start saying 2-in-100 or 3-in-100, because it seems like 2 years in a row we've had these massive downpours.
Yeah.
And Remus and I were at Tom Petty on Thursday night. He asked me to go. We went through the station, and we were pretty much swimming to the concert. I mean, yeah. It rained so much in a short period of time, really. It just comes down so quickly, and when it doesn't stop, it's ridiculous. But I'm going to the lake today, so I hope it doesn't rain too much.
Oh, thanks for the invite.
But unfortunately, well, you know, it's family. I consider you family, Drew, yes. I would invite you, but there's a lot of people going out there. We got my aunt coming in from Vancouver, so I mean, I'm hoping it. Well, she's in town actually already, but you're always invited. But,
I appreciate the
gesture. There's a lot of people.
It's a whole thing. You don't need.
Was I invited to Kentucky? Well,
no.
I was invited for the wedding.
You were invited to the wedding.
I didn't get an invite for the PGA Championship.
No, that's true. Fair point. You make a fair point. Did you enjoy the Bomber game last night? Big comeback win in this. I mean, the first half was about as dull as watching a game was last year. But at least
what
it was
the
close.
Score after the first half?
6-1.
Yeah, it was a hockey game in the first half. But no, it was good for them to get the victory. Turnovers actually finally kind of played in their favor.
Yeah, they only had the one turnover, the one interception. Whereas Montreal, I guess they had the. I mean, they had the three picks that Leggett had, and then they had the turnover on downs as well. So I guess four turnovers.
Honestly, Drew, I thought they were going to put Jeff Garcia in.
Well, you know, obviously we don't want to talk too much about the CFL, given that this is a hockey show. I thought Jonathan Crompton, who came in to replace Alex Brink, showed that he's got something. I mean, you know, for a guy in his first real CFL action, and I know he was the fourth string quarterback, I think, 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden he's, you know, getting the majority of the reps during a game that was there for the taking for the most part. I thought he, you know, the picks were, you know, off tip ball, so it's not like he missed his receivers terribly. I thought Montreal looked like he might have something there with that guy, but you know, screw Montreal. The Bombers got the win. They're 6-3, and we go back to back Labor Day and then Banjo Bowl. So you know, everybody's excited about that.
Well, it's awesome that they were able to pick up the win after the two consecutive losses. But you know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, Montreal for so many years. The Alouettes would come into here and beat up on the Bombers, and they have all the Grey Cups. You know, in the last few years, last 10 years or so. And, you know, they're struggling. This is the post-Anthony Calvillo era. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks, if not the greatest quarterback in CFL history. And they're struggling. But, hey, it's nice. The season that the Bombers had, I don't think the fans are you know, upset that this team's able to win 6 out of their first 9. And they have a good shot at, you know, doing some damage in the playoffs. So it's nice to see. Hats off to Mike O'Shea and Wade Miller. And they've turned the ship around.
Absolutely. Let's get started on hockey, and I'm not sure if you've heard the audio or not, Ezzy, but Evander Kane was on our affiliate in Vancouver earlier this week, and you know, as any time Evander tends to give a radio interview, it tends to make a little bit of noise. This one certainly did not make as much noise as the last one he gave. I guess that would have been about a month ago, give or take, at this point in time. We'll play a little clip from the audio. This is Evander Kane talking about having never made the playoffs yet in his 6-year NHL career.
Well, I don't think anybody wants to not have any success in the playoffs and not make the playoffs. If you went around the league there, you wouldn't find, I don't think you'd find anybody. But, you know, for me, I'm used to winning. I only enjoy winning. And, you know, from when I was young all the way till I got to the NHL, I've won almost at every level. So, it's definitely frustrating, you know, not to have been in the playoffs this far in my career, going into my 6th season. It's disappointing, but it's something that hopefully I can turn around. And, you know, I like the big stage. I like the pressure. And, you know, the playoffs, there's no better time. And it gets chippy. It gets dirty. It's physical. It's fun. You get to score goals. So, I mean, watching it's great, but I like to be in it this year.
6 seasons. Goes by pretty quickly, doesn't it?
It sure does. It sure does.
It absolutely does. 6 seasons without having made the playoffs for a guy like Evander Kane must feel like an eternity. You know, that comment, I don't think any Jets fan can have a problem with it. He says that he wants to play in the playoffs. He wants to be in the spotlight of the playoffs when it is at its, you know, when the hockey world is at its most attentive. So if Evander Kane, you know, and I think last year during the playoffs, he also made a bit of a stir on Twitter, tweeting out similar things about his desire and his want to make it to the playoffs, you know, and to play there when the spotlight is the brightest. To me, Jets fans hear that, they got to be fine with that. They have to be happy with that. It's a guy who wants to play in the playoffs, which is what the Jets fans themselves want more than anything as well.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. And in this case, it's the summer, and we've already heard Evander Kane's comments at the golf tournament earlier, at another golf tournament earlier this year with our friend Matt Sakaris, yeah, on radio in Vancouver. And he's a competitive guy, and you obviously want to hear this coming from Evander Kane. And I think, you know, the tweets that you were talking about before, I know we're going to have to touch on the Andrew Ladd tweet, which favoriting, which unfavoriting, which I think is beyond ridiculous. I'll share my comments on that in a second.
But we're going to talk about it, because if it was Evander Kane who favorited and then unfavorited, or then favorited or then retweeted and then favorited and then didn't retweet and then undid his retweet and then favorited and then favorited again, we would be talking about it. So turnabout is fair play. If it's the captain who does it, you got to treat it with the same respect that if Evander Kane did it.
By the way, Drew, there's people out there that probably aren't on Twitter that have no idea what you're talking about. Favoriting, retweeting, detweeting.
Undo
Instagram,
mamming. Yeah, Instagram, mamming.
I mean, as far as these comments go, right? He's a competitive guy, as I said, and he has always been a competitive guy throughout his career. He went to the Memorial Cup with the Vancouver Giants. He's had success in the WHL. He's won World Junior tournaments. Evander Kane isn't happy, and by the way, I think that if the Winnipeg Jets, when the Jets make the playoffs, that will have a big impact on Evander Kane, I think, and his willingness to be a part of the Jets in the future. I truly believe that. And I know it's going to be hard this year in the Central Division for the Winnipeg Jets to make the playoffs with all of the other teams reloading, Dallas and Nashville. And I've always said that was going to have a positive impact on players wanting to come here. And Ken Campbell in the Hockey News wrote about this, actually, Detroit. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, all players wanting to go to Detroit. Why did they want to go to Detroit? Was it because Detroit wanted to spend more money on free agents? Or was it because Detroit was a winning team year after year after year, and players wanted to go play with Steve Yzerman? They wanted to go play with Nicklas Lidström. I think that that is going to have a huge impact on players wanting to come here, and Evander Kane being more positive about being here. Again, we've talked about this for the first 3 years of the Winnipeg Jets 2.0 being back, and Evander Kane and his attitude and whether he really wants to be here. He hasn't said that he hasn't wanted to be here, but the intentions and the perception is that probably this isn't his ideal place to play. The unfortunate thing for him is he's under contract. He signed a six-year contract, and so the Jets made a long-term commitment to Evander Kane. He made a long-term commitment to the team and the city. So you hear those comments, and he's frustrated. And if you're a Jets fan, you hope that Evander Kane is going to go into training camp in the regular season and be more fired up. And we've heard from himself that he's been training hard in Vancouver, skating in Vancouver. He's going to come to training camp, Drew, and hopefully have a career year. Because I think many of us, whether that's fans or members of the media or whatever, believe that Evander Kane has 40 goals and 80 points in him. I think he's still young enough that he hasn't reached his potential.
I agree with what you said just there about how, you know, winning definitely does cure all ails. You know, if this team was winning consistently, you would hear a lot less griping from, you know, Evander, I suspect, and from some other people and everything else. You know, from the player, from a fan's perspective, from a player's perspective, from an organizational perspective, nobody is happy that they continue to lose. Nobody is happy. I mean, you know, and this ties into the Andrew Ladd favoriting thing. Nobody is happy that the organization does not seem to have taken a step forward this offseason. You know, you look at your rivals in and around your division, and the Jets have improved the least out of everybody. I think it's safe to say we've said it on the show, since, you know, every show pretty much since July 1st and since the NHL draft. You know, so when you don't improve and when you see your opponents improving, it tends to lead to frustration. And I don't think that should come as a shock to anybody. Here's another part of Evander Kane's interview from her sister station in Vancouver. You know, him talking about wanting to play in a hockey market.
You know, I like the big stage. It's just my personality. Whether that's a Canadian market, whether that's New York City, whether that's LA, you know, the big stage. You know, yeah. I love playing in MSG when I'm on the road. I've always enjoyed that. And you know, the other big cities that you know, kind of present that big stage and where everybody's watching. So it's fun to get up for those games and get up for the place you're playing if it's a big market. And you know, I think Winnipeg definitely presents that self in terms of you know, the everybody has their eyes on you. So it's fun, and it's something that I do enjoy.
Well, everybody certainly has their eyes on you in Winnipeg. It's not a big market. But, I mean, this doesn't bother me, his comment. I don't think this should come as a surprise to anybody. Evander Kane sees himself as a big market guy. He sees himself as a guy who, you know, is going to go into New York City, and he's going to be the toast of Madison Square Garden. He's going to go into Los Angeles, and he's going to be a great hockey player for the Los Angeles Kings, and at the same time, he's going to rub elbows with the Floyd Mayweathers and the superstar athletes, the David Beckhams, the people that are drawn to, you know, there's no big time quite like the big time of New York and Los Angeles. You know, that's what he sees himself. He's happy. I mean, if he was happy just having the spotlight on him and having people's eyes on him, he could be happy in Winnipeg. But I think he sees himself as more than just a NHL player. I think he sees himself as something additional to that that he just cannot get while being in Winnipeg. You know, look, Evander Kane is arrogant. Evander Kane has got his warts on him personality-wise. He's always been honest, and I don't really have a problem with his honesty. Would I like him to want to be in Winnipeg long-term? Sure. I'm from Winnipeg. I live here. I love the city. I'd like, you know, it to be shown in a better light than it's really being shown in this situation. But I can also appreciate the guy that he's being honest, if sometimes not too honest, when he you know, discusses his wants for his career.
And I think during that interview, especially that clip that we just played, I think they're trying to hint at a little something without asking him, would you prefer to play in a larger city?
Sure.
They were kind of beating around the bush a little bit, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, yes, Evander Kane does have a larger-than-life personality. He's got a swagger. And a lot of people like that. And to be honest with you, he's entitled to have that. I think you see that in a lot of facets of life. That's the type of person that he is. And I've always said this before, that and you just touched on it a little bit there, Drew. I would love for him to want to be part of the team, because I think skill-wise, talent-wise, I think he has more talent than arguably any other player on the team. I mean, you could argue this, you know, Jacob Trouba or Mark Scheifele, but as far as natural skill goes, Evander Kane is one of the fastest guys in the league. He's got tons of talent. And as I mentioned, I don't think that he's scratched the surface as far as his potential goes. He's only 23 years old. So, I mean, there's still a lot of hockey to come for him. And as far as that, the stage, I think you want guys that are like that. And to me, I still, you know, considering that we are all expecting a trade to happen at the draft or right around the draft, I still hold out hope that if the Jets start to win and he has personal success as well as team success, he'll want to stay here and play out the remaining years of his contract.
If he, you know, decides that he doesn't want to continue his career in hockey, obviously it's not going to happen, he does have a career ahead of him in stand-up comedy. Because referring to these two guys as key contributors that the Jets lost is the funniest thing that anybody said about the Winnipeg Jets all offseason. Here's Evander Kane again.
We've obviously lost some guys that were on the team last year, and key guys in terms of Setoguchi and Jokinen and what have you. But, you know, we think we've re-signed a few guys and signed a couple of free agents in terms of Perreault and Gilardi, I believe. So, should be interesting to see what happens at camp and see how things figure themselves out.
Last time you were on this radio station.
Referring to Devin Setoguchi as a key guy that they lost from last season is the funniest thing you're going to hear on this radio station all day.
Well, Setoguchi was a healthy scratch towards the end of the year. Yeah. So he clearly was not a key part of we got to qualify that for, you know, the fans out there. Setoguchi and Jokinen were two of his best friends on the team.
Right.
You know, obviously Kane has other friends on the team, but Jokinen was here for 2 years. And, you know, I think he's referring more to that because I think the lack of contract, Devin Setoguchi hasn't signed an NHL contract.
I think that tells you all you need to
and
know.
And Jokinen, yeah, of course, he signed with Nashville, but I think we'd all agree that the $4.5 million cap hit that he was getting, especially in the lockout shortened year, he was not living up to that. And I think we'd all agree, again, that Matthew Perreault is an upgrade over Olli Jokinen. So, I mean, those comments, I think...
It was the best thing you're going to hear on this radio station all day.
Take it with a grain of salt.
I mean, to say that Devin Setoguchi was a key contributor in anything last year besides sitting on the bench and wasting space is hilarious. Before we go to break, we got to touch on Andrew Ladd, the favoriting of the tweet. You know, do you buy that he did it accidentally, or do you think that he did it and he didn't think it would be an issue?
I couldn't care less. And I think that this is my whole thing with Twitter. And, you know, you know this, Drew. Timmy knows this. Like, I love Twitter. I love Instagram. I love Facebook. I love doing this whole social media thing.
Yeah, you're, in fact, doing it while we're on air right now. It's impressive.
This whole unfavoriting thing, is the fact that this is news is mind-boggling. Like, I realize it's the summer again, and I realize there's no hockey being played right now, and we still have, you know, 4 or so weeks to go before training camp starts. But, like, let's really get a grip here. All the bad things that are going on in the world, all the problems going on in the world, even people's personal problems, but also in the grand scheme of things, this is what we're focusing on. It's ridiculous. Like, let's not waste our time on this. If he did it by accident, or if he didn't do it by accident, let's say he did do it. And he's having fun or whatever. Like, let's not read too much into this. Like, Andrew Ladd's the captain of the team. I don't think that we should read any, like, at all. Like, I saw this, and I, like, when as soon as this, like, blew up on Twitter, I logged off Twitter. I didn't go on Twitter for the rest of the day.
I don't believe that for a second.
No, I did. I didn't technically. I mean, I always have Twitter open on my the app on my phone.
I'm already poking holes into your story.
No, but I mean, like, is this news? Like I've accidentally favorited a tweet, like, but no, obviously I'm not Andrew Ladd and no one cares about the tweets that I favorite.
A surprising number of people. You know what always blows my mind, and we're going to go to break right after this, but you know what always blows my mind about Twitter? I'll look at somebody's Twitter profile, and in their bio, it'll say that they were a 2012 Ezzy Award winner.
I love it.
And I'm like, that's enough. I'm done. Why am I on social media? Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the changes the NHL has made to the draft lottery. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Given the comedy of the previous segment, it's only appropriate that this segment be brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. Their 30-year anniversary later on this year in November. A big show planned for that. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. They're going to be closed for the next couple weeks. As you mentioned, Ezzy, they got a little bit damp during the rainstorm of a couple days ago. But they return with a little bit of a refresh look early in September. Tickets available for all shows, rumorscomedyclub.com. The guys from Broken Lizard will be there September 11th to 13th. So get your tickets for that.
Is there still tickets?
Looks like there might be a couple, not many.
I want to go to that.
Go quick.
I got to go to that.
Yeah. So
you want to go to that?
Not with you.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, those guys are, I don't know how into Super Troopers and Club Dread, and there's the Slam and Salmon. There's a bunch of movies. I'm probably missing one or two there. But, like, those movies to me are, like, I can watch those movies again and again. Like, that's my type of comedy right there.
Uh-huh. Stoner comedy.
Well, Minus the stoning, of course, Drew.
Now,
or the
course.
Stonerine, or whatever the kids are.
Yeah, those kids, those lousy kids nowadays. NHL announced some changes to its draft lottery format. It's going to take effect in two different phases. The first phase is in time for the 2014-15 season. Basically, what they have done, in as layman's terms as possible, is that the odds for the bottom three teams at
get
the
worse.
End of the regular season get worse.
Yep. By 5%.
By 5%. So it used to be that if you finished 30th in the NHL, your odds of winning the draft lottery were 25%. They're now down to 20%. So the odds for the bottom three teams have gotten worse, while the odds of winning the draft lottery for the next 11 teams have gotten marginally better. It's still a very slim opportunity, but they've gotten marginally better. For 2014-15, the lottery is again only for the first overall pick. Meaning, if you finish 30th, the lowest you can fall is to second overall. In time for 2015-16, the draft lottery is going to be for the top three picks. Meaning, they will draw for one, first overall, second overall, and third overall. Which means that if you finished 30th overall, if you were the worst team during the regular season in the NHL, starting in 2015-2016, you can drop as low as fourth overall in terms of drafting in the first round.
Right.
It's the same system that they now have in the NBA.
Yes.
Your thoughts on the change?
I think it makes sense. It makes complete sense. And I think that this change even makes more sense considering that the first overall pick in the 2015 draft, unless a team really likes Jack Eichel, will be Connor McDavid.
Sure.
And we've been hearing about Connor McDavid for 3 years now. And he's probably certainly the highest-rated prospect since Nathan MacKinnon, but you could even probably go back to John Tavares and Steven Stamkos. He's at that level as far as being able to come into the NHL and be a dominant player in the NHL at a very early age. And I think Nathan MacKinnon, I mean, it's funny that he's being compared to John Tavares and Steven Stamkos in the sense that he'll be able to have that impact, because Nathan MacKinnon in 1 year had a huge part to do with the Colorado Avalanche winning that division. So I think it makes sense, Drew, and you mentioned that it's modeled after the NBA, but I think the key point here is you look at the odds and the lowest placed team, the 30th overall team in the NHL, so they have a 20% chance, whereas it was 25%. But I think the key point here is for the team that has the worst record, they can now finish fourth.
That's right.
So, I mean, if you look at it like that as opposed to the percentages, because you look at the percentages and you say, okay, well, 20-25%, it's only 5%. But the key to that is that you can now drop three.
Because starting in 2015-16.
Starting in 2015-16, right? Yeah. So now you can still only fall one. So if
next year, if you're the Buffaloes, I mean,
we hate to pick on the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, their fans want to finish dead last.
Well, the whole thing with Connor McDavid, the Erie Otters are going to be playing there.
That's right.
That whole,
the Erie Otters are going to play a one junior game in, I guess, what's called the first, what's their arena called?
Oh, Harbor Center.
No, that's the new development.
That's where the combine's going to be.
Yeah, that's the whole development that they're building there. The arena is
well,
the arena of the
first Niagara Center.
First Niagara Center.
Right.
Thank
I thought you. Okay. I thought. Well, I'm not sure when the Harbor Center is going to be built. I don't think it'll be built within the next couple months. But
no, I think it's going to be ready for the
next year.
For the next year's scouting combine,
right?
Because that they
it's usually in Toronto. It's been in Toronto for the last 10 years or 15 years or
yeah,
something.
They announced that the next two scouting combines, I think, are going to be
in Buffalo.
This Harbor Center.
Well, that's
which
good.
Is a whole
Why not?
New
I mean,
development.
Buffalo. I mean, a lot of people. Buffalo's not far away from Toronto, anyways. So,
sure.
But the whole issue that they were asking him, Connor McDavid, that is, they were asking him, you know, how would you like to play in Buffalo? But the point, going back to our original point about the draft lottery and the seeding, the worst Buffalo can draft, if they finish last, is second.
That's right.
This year.
So, which means you either take McDavid or you know, if you're second, you just sit there and you say, okay, well, the guy in front of me is either going to take McDavid or Eichel, and I'll take whichever one is left over, and I'll gladly take them and change the face of my franchise.
Well, this draft is considered to be a much stronger draft than the 2014 draft class, and you have Noah Hanifin, who's the highest-ranked defenseman out of the U.S. National Development Program. Daniel Sprong, who plays for the Charlottetown Islanders, is a top-10 pick.
Right. Good friend, general manager, is Grant Sonia, good yeah, friend of the show.
It's considered a strong draft. There's actually another Colin White, not the former New Jersey Devils defenseman, but there's another prospect named Colin White, an American player. So, I mean, it's considered a stronger draft, but I think that this is important because I think you want to do as much as you can to avoid this whole tanking phenomenon
sure,
that we obviously are familiar with in 1984 with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
So I think that
pretty
this
sure
makes
you
sense.
Played a game for them that yeah, year, and you were 2 years old.
Yeah, and so I mean it makes complete sense here. I don't think that when you're I think too we've seen this so many times when you're you know NHL modeling certain things after the NBA as far as the draft lottery goes, it kind of makes sense and it avoids any. It's fair. I think we could all agree that this is equitable.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you consider 2 years from now, I think if your team can move up a few spots, you finish fourth last or something like that, I think this actually adds a little bit of excitement. We've seen in the NBA with the draft lottery, it's exciting. The team gets the first overall pick, the Cleveland Cavaliers. We've
it's
seen
it's certainly
that.
More exciting than what, I mean, I think we last year the draft lottery was held on a Wednesday. So we were on with NHL Midweek, which returns, by the way, October 8th here on the station. And so we broadcast the, you know, we picked up the TSN feed and showed the draft lottery. And, I mean, it's how they can turn that into a 30-minute television special blows my mind because it was a little bit dull, I'll be honest. But you're right. But when it's going to be for the top three spots and you can see a team go from first to fourth or a team jump up from ninth to second, there's a little bit more involved with it and a little bit more potential for interest.
Well, we saw, was it Travis Viola of the Florida Panthers that was representing Florida this year?
Yeah.
Was it Travis Viola?
I
think it was.
I don't remember what his name was. He's the son of the yes, owner, Vinny Viola?
Yeah, Vincent Viola.
I call him Vinny. We're
Vinny.
Close.
But you know, that was exciting because Florida finished 29th and Buffalo finished 30th, of course. So I think it would be really bad if that happened again because I think it's you don't want to take anything away from Jack Eichel because we've had a few people on the show that have said really, very highly things about Jack Eichel. I mean, he's a top prospect. But I think we'd all agree that Connor McDavid, right now, most teams, I think, would have him, most scouts would have him number one on their list. And if they aren't able to get him because they lose the draft lottery. But hey, guys, that's to ensure fairness.
But I find it very interesting that the NHL is not putting it into place for this season that you can drop from the first overall pick based on your 30th place standing all the way to fourth. I find it that they're waiting till after the Eichel McDavid sweepstakes of this year to institute the sort of the more comprehensive lottery. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's obviously a deliberate. That's the only way they could probably get this agreement passed through the Board of Governors is because the Buffalo Sabres would say, wait a minute, we're going to be lousy this year. The only thing our fans can have to hope for is that we finish dead last and thus either get McDavid or Eichel. All of a sudden, you're going to tell us that we're going to finish dead last and we're going to get whoever the fourth best prospect is. They're not as excited for that.
It's quite possible, or it might have had there might have been other motives, but it's tough to overlook that because I think, especially in this year, when you're looking at who's available at number one, I think a team that finishes 28th, or especially 29th, the odds being better, the closer you get to the bottom. I think they would love to have the chance to move up, but as we know, under the current system, you can only go up at that position by one, mm-hmm. and you can only drop a max of four.
Right.
And it's very hard for that to happen because the odds are so skewed in your favor. But, I mean, I have no problem with this. I think, to be honest with you, I think as far as the draft and, you know, being the draft lottery, I should say, being covered on TV, I think it'll make it a lot more interesting. If you know that you finished 27th in the NHL and you have a chance to get that
better
first
chance,
overall pick.
Because you always have
exactly.
yeah, a better chance.
A better chance, yeah.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the shakeup at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Tim Leiwicki is going to depart as CEO. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Twenty minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to
love
the
this song.
Curve.
What? Arcade Fire. It's great.
Did you go to the concert?
No. You know, I kind of regret not going to that concert, even though a lot
would
of
would you dress up? You know, you have to go in costume.
No, I didn't go to Arcade Fire.
I know, but if you had gone, would you
I dressed
have gone?
Up as Tom Petty on Thursday night.
Oh,
though.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. No, but I what I heard from a lot of people, you know, you hear certain bands. I know Timmy. And I and Tim's friend, I forget what I'll ask Tim after. But
you can ask him now.
We went to Black Keys. There's certain bands that don't work at the MTS Center.
Yeah,
and I'm not being negative against the venue. I'm just saying the band.
Yeah, some bands are better live than others.
No, not just that. The venue, like their music, is a little bit more suited for a smaller venue.
Okay,
but from everyone that I heard, it was a great show. But
I saw they opened for U2. I saw them in opened for U2 in Ottawa. I guess, oh geez, that would have been almost 10 years ago now.
By the way, Tim, Black Keys are coming back. I mean, I think we should maybe get on that.
You want to go again?
Yeah, I'm in.
I'll call up my buddy John again. Yeah,
John. Yeah, John we went Kovich. And we actually had a really good time. But I think Timmy's a musician. He knows what I mean by certain bands. And the thing is, it's great about True North taking over the Burton Cummings Theater. You know, they've always had good shows. I think it's going to get better. But just certain bands. That's all I'm saying. Because I love going to concerts, you know that. And I think just certain, like Black Keys, for example, I'm probably going to go see them at the MTS Center with Timmy and John. But
apparently, you just made the date on air.
For example, Black Keys would be so much better, in my opinion, this is just me, at Burton Cummings Theater.
Okay.
Because they're more of a kind of, like, it's more of a kind of rock, like, not more of rock. What I mean is, like, it's just the type of music they play. There's a certain band that is better suited for arena rock. Anyways.
So far on this hockey show today, we've covered football, Twitter, and rock and roll. So this has been a hell of a hockey show.
We can
far.
Talk about the muffin that I'm eating right now, Drew.
Nobody wants to talk about the muffin you're eating.
Well, it's gone. So
Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, big changes there announced earlier this week. CEO Tim Leiwicki is going to leave in June of 2015. If not earlier, if they find a CEO earlier than that, he will leave at that point in time. Darren Dreger, our colleague on TSN, was on TSN Drive in Toronto talking about the announcement.
And I'm assuming it was the board because the cat was out of the bag on Tuesday. I got to believe that the board and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment saw no value in having to deal with this for the next 3 to 6 months. So, you know, if you talk to some, not just internally, but, you know, those who are close enough to Tim Leiwicki, they would say this isn't surprising.
Right.
The message that he would have been telling his friends all along was that his intent was to leave Toronto, to leave MLSE again by June of 2015. But, you know, the sense that I have is that, you know, the news breaks on Tuesday, the denials come flowing, you know, then yesterday erupts and the board meets and they're going, okay, hold on a sec. If this is the intent, and we all knew that this was the intent, then let's just come clean with it. Let's get it out there, and then we can start focusing on the task and the search at hand.
First of all, when the announcement was broken by Elliot Friedman and then denied, and then Elliot was proven to be correct, you would have thought that the Prime Minister, the President of the United States, and the Pope all resigned at the exact same time. I mean, holy hell, we're talking about the CEO of a corporation that I'm sure he's got a very difficult job. I don't want to take away anything from his job. But I can't believe that if I was running Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment for at least 6 months, if I ran it for 6 months, I can't believe I could do that much damage to it. that it would all of a sudden wouldn't be one of Canada's biggest corporations at the end of the 6 months.
What?
So smart guy, Tim Leiwicki. I'm sure he's a business genius, but really keep everything in check a little bit. What we're talking about, this isn't the guy who ran the entire country.
I agree with you, and I think it obviously has something to do with the market and the fact that Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment controls the Raptors and they control the Toronto FC, not to mention the Leafs and real estate and their whole empire. It's got to be worth, I don't know exactly what it's worth. I've heard a couple billion dollars.
At least
a couple billion dollars. So we're talking about like the biggest sports and entertainment company in Canada, and it's probably up there in the U.S., I imagine. And I think the reason why, and you mentioned, Elliot Friedman was breaking the news and then they had to deny it, and it turned out he was right, and for the most part, he's always right. He's a good journalist. Elliot Friedman breaking that news, that is. And, I think it was probably also to do with the fact that did he not sign a 5-year contract?
I don't know. I don't want to speculate on his contract details because I'm not sure about them. But it sounds like, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment is a very conservative organization.
If you read what Elliot Friedman wrote, I don't think they like some of the brash decisions and style of Leiwicki.
Well, and who's another guy that used to work for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment who would be a little bit brash, a little bit non-conservative, a little bit unconventional? A guy named Brian Burke. And so he was shown the door. Leiwicki, again, came out when he was hired. We're going to plan parades. We're going to be, a lot of boastful comments that, again, a little bit too out there for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. So I'm not surprised that, and I think a lot of guys who are closer to the situation than we are, a lot of the guys, the Toronto media, Steve Simmons wrote about it in the Toronto Sun.
Yep.
I think that both sides may have been happy to see this come to an end when it did. But the getting there, the denial, on the report on Tuesday, then the denial, and then the confirmation by Thursday, I think was a little bit uglier than both sides probably wanted. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, more so than Tim Leiwicki, in my opinion. I think that, here's what the problem I have with what Leiwicki did. Elliot Friedman's obviously got a good story here. I think everybody knew that Elliot Friedman had a good story there. And Leiwicki is splitting hairs by when he made his denial, saying, no, I'm not leaving. He took offense with Elliot Friedman's use of the word soon. I mean, soon is a very subjective length of time. Come on, you were going. Everybody knew you were going. Just, sort of say no comment and let it happen on its own without having to play, fast and loose with the word soon and
right.
Details of that nature.
Right, and obviously Elliot Friedman was given a piece of information, and he went ahead and reported it.
Yeah.
Did a good job reporting it.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned, in that particular case, just say no comment or this is exactly what's going on. I think the issue here, and you mentioned, that this was such a big news story. And I think it would have been a big news story even if this was in the middle of the hockey year, by the way, just because it is MLSE. And I know
it would have been because it's Toronto and it's the center of the universe.
I know there was arguments, from media members, some certain media members about why is this really a big story? Well, and again, this is the nature of the business. Sports is a multi-billion dollar business. MLSE is a multi-billion dollar company. It's important who's running the company.
It's a big story if the head of GM Canada would have left General Motors or whatever.
Yep.
And, we wouldn't pay as much attention to it because that's not what we do. But it would have been a big story in the car industry world and in business world. So I understand why it's a big story. It just, holy hell.
Well,
it's not that big a story.
I think, when you talk about Tim Leiwicki also and where he was coming from, running the LA Kings and coming from California, and because he's high profile, I think that's also has something to do with it. And all of the decisions he's made with bringing Brendan Shanahan in and then changing Raptors GM and all that, he's made, I think, his legacy, which is going to be a short legacy. I think it's going to prove that he did a lot of good things. And I know people make fun of the Drake thing. That was a great decision.
It was a genius decision. The Toronto Raptors are cool.
Exactly. And Drake immediately makes them cool.
Yeah.
So, of all the decisions that he's made, bringing in Jermaine Defoe to play for the Toronto FC and all that, all of the decisions they all look good.
Yeah, they do. So, I agree with you there. Darren Drager, one more time from TSN 1050, speculating on who might be the replacement.
I'm not sure that that's a one-man job, which, you know, will spark more speculation moving forward. We're feverishly internally trying to compile a candidates list. Well, how do you do that? Because, you know, in the moment, there's no such thing as a bad candidate.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we head to Ottawa, a little bit down the 417, to talk about some of the changes in the Senators organization. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Jason Spezza was traded earlier this season from the Ottawa Senators to the Dallas Stars. He was on yesterday for the first time speaking to Ottawa media. He was on TSN 1200 speaking to Ian Mendez. Here is Jason Spezza yesterday, a clip discussing whether or not or why he didn't want a contract extension with the Ottawa Senators.
I think it was time for me to move on. I think that the organization's going through, you know, a different period and probably a little more of a rebuild and going with a different approach. So for me, I felt that at the place of my career where I'm at, that I wanted to move on somewhere else and get a fresh start for myself and also, you know, it allowed the team to grow and be a younger team. So, but I think that I knew that it was time to move on, and I think they knew the same thing.
So Ezzy, what do you make of that? You know, Jason Spezza, I never really liked his trade demand. I never liked how it became public. I never liked how he sort of handled it from his end. But, you know, he speaks there yesterday. He says that the team, you know, knew that it was time to move on as well. Do you buy that, or do you think that he's just sort of justifying his request to get off of a bit of a sinking ship?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you're right, Drew. He's being honest. And I think it's pretty clear that the Jason Spezza and previous to that Daniel Alfredson era was over, and Jason Spezza, I think at no point was he comfortable taking over that leadership role, and I think he might not ever admit to that, but I don't think that he was comfortable taking over that role. That's just my opinion, and I think that he was growing tired of Ottawa, and you know, a lot of fans, and I think the story has been somehow framed as Jason Spezza was really the whipping boy and he was taking all of the brunt of the criticism and all that. And it's not that I don't agree with that, but I think that for Jason Spezza at this point in his career, I think, and we're looking at it for just him, and I know he was the captain and I know he was the best player on the Ottawa Senators. I think for Jason Spezza, Drew, He had enough of being in Ottawa, and he had had enough of being the guy and the fact that the team was struggling. And again, a couple of years ago, Paul MacLean was the head coach. Pardon me, he's still the head coach.
Yeah, still the head coach.
I meant Jack Adams winner, and the team made the playoffs. And I know they lost, but a couple of years later, you know, they're missing the playoffs and everything's completely gone down the toilet. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, Jason Spezza is looking at this and he's saying, well, you know, I want a fresh start in my career. And I don't fault him for that. I know what you're saying, Drew, the way it kind of got out in the media and all that. And then we heard that he was destined really to go to Well, we know that he was there was a trade on the table for him to go to the Nashville Predators. And he decided to veto that trade. He didn't want to go there.
Right.
And he ended up going to Dallas. And Alex Hemsky followed him to Dallas. There's a good chance that Spezza and Hemsky play together, by the way. I mean, they'll have to figure out the lines with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn are a staple there, but they're going to have to figure out who else is going to be on that line, if it's Valerie Nichushkin. I think the Dallas Stars have a bright future, and they've got Cody Eakin and Ryan Garbutt there, and two Winnipeg guys. I mean, as far as Spezza's time in Ottawa, and I think he's had a lot of success. And I think, you know, when you look back on his career in Ottawa, you look back at the years he was putting up 90 plus points.
Yeah,
the lack of playoff success is going to be something that's there. And I remember, you know, even as recently as 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we were talking about, you know, is Jason Spezza really the type of player that can put a team on his back, and can he have that playoff success? And I mean, he's still, fortunately, he's still young enough that he has many good years in the NHL ahead of him. And I think a team like Dallas, where now he can be
I think he has a huge year in Dallas.
Well, I think a lot of the pressure's off of him
now. Sure.
So, I mean, and I think that's, by the way, what he completely wanted.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And by the way, there's certain players that is an issue for them. And some players, I think really, when you look at it, that's also the job of management and coaches to realize if there's too much pressure on one player. And to me, and I think you'd probably agree with this, last year, and even the year before, but the thing is, a couple of years ago, they were having a lot of success getting into the playoffs after missing the playoffs 3 years ago. I think everything was, well, Jason Spezza this, Jason Spezza that. He didn't have a bad year. I mean, the team had a bad year. Everybody had a bad year.
Right.
So, I mean, and same thing with Eric Carlson. Eric Carlson didn't have a bad year. He didn't have a Norris year. He didn't have as many points as he did 2 years ago. But the thing is, the team struggled defensively in goal. They had injuries. Bobby Ryan didn't quite do what they wanted him to do.
It's funny you mention Eric Carlson and leadership there and talking about Jason Spezza, because Carlson came out earlier this week and he said he's ready for a bigger leadership role on this team. This is now Eric Carlson's team. I think it probably was Eric Carlson's team the last couple of years, but, I mean, there was still Spezza and Alfredson the year before that. They were still there. But Eric Carlson now comes out, he says he wants a bigger leadership role. The captaincy is available there in Ottawa. I would not be surprised if Eric Carlson is the new captain of the Senators. He's their, I mean, with all due respect to Bobby Ryan, I think Carlson's their best player. I'm not sure that Ottawa is going to be any good of a team. I don't think that they will be. I don't really understand a lot of the moves they've made, including, I mean, they signed Clark MacArthur this week to a 5-year contract extension. It's a 5-year, $23.25 million deal, an average annual value of $4.65 million. He had a good year last year. He had 55 points in 79 games. It's the best year he's had in a few in the NHL. He's still under contract for this season on a previous contract.
Yep.
So I'm not sure what the rush was to sign him to this big deal. You know, sure, if he puts out another 55 points, well, even, I mean, I don't know if a 55-point player is worth $4.65 million.
No, that's about what, if you looked at a lot of similar players that are around that point range, they're probably making that money. But
that contract kicks in when he's going to be 30 years old when that contract kicks in. Do you want to be paying a 34-year-old, 35-year-old Clark MacArthur that much money for a guy, his best career or his best season in the NHL, I think, saw him put up something like 62 points, and that was in 2010, 2011 with Toronto? I just didn't quite understand what the rush was to sign him deal.
You could wait another year. I really like Clark MacArthur. I know when Richie's been on the show, he's not as big of a fan, but he was a key player for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The thing with Clark MacArthur is he has the ability to play in all situations, and he's good on the penalty kill. You can put him out on the power play. I think he was third on the team in ice time for forwards. But, I mean, as far as Clark MacArthur goes, he's a guy that had success playing with Kyle Turris. And let's put it this way. I mean, Clark MacArthur is a player, even like I said, he plays in all situations and all that. But the team has to be a lot better defensively. And let's be honest, especially with Spezza leaving now, this is a very young team, and you've got, you know, Curtis Lazar, who was drafted in 2013. They expect big things out of him. Is he going to be able to play on the team this year? Mika Zibanejad. I mean, they have a lot of young players. You mentioned, you know, going back to Eric Carlson, Drew, and how he might be the the new captain. I think Mark Methot is another guy that they've talked about as being a possible captain. But I think, to your point, whether or not Eric Carlson has an A on his sweater or a C on his sweater, which I agree with you, by the way, I think he will become the next captain. You like to hear out of him that he's saying that he wants more of a leadership role, because he is one of the most talented defensemen in the NHL, great offensively. Mm-hmm. I still think he's got a lot of work to do on his defensive game. I don't think he's quite at the Shea Weber, Ryan Suter elite overall defenseman level, but you want to hear that because it's going to be his team now to lead, especially with the leadership gap that Spezza leaves. And again, like I said, I think Spezza, you know, he was given the C, but I just don't know if he's that type of player that really thrives under that role. I think Spezza, his game is focusing on offense. And certain players just aren't natural leaders.
I agree with you. We'll talk about another team that's got some leadership problems. That's the San Jose Sharks when we return. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Rona Roundtable with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. And Richard Pollock is away this week. Well-deserved summer week off, summer vacation for a week.
Is it well-deserved?
I don't know. I was being nice.
Does he deserve one?
I'm skeptical.
Does anybody really deserve a vacation?
Yes, a lot of people. Everybody deserves a vacation at some point in time or another.
Not Richie deserves a vacation.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to tell him that, though. He'll get his ego too big, and that'll be a problem. He works hard.
Still
to come on the show, next segment, David Pollock from the San Jose Mercury News is going to join us. No relation. Spelled differently. to talk about the San Jose Sharks. A little bit of upheaval in the dressing room there in San Jose. Sharks assistant coach Larry Robinson was on our affiliate in Montreal earlier. I believe it was yesterday, in fact, on TSN 690. Here he is talking about the decision to strip Joe Thornton of his captaincy in San Jose.
Message it sends to him. Is there any chance that you think maybe, you know, does he bounce back from this? Not physically, but mentally. Same was done to Patrick Marleau. I would imagine a very difficult decision made by the Sharks.
Well, I mean, it's never an easy decision, but it's a decision, and it's not the only decision, but there's definitely, there was a shakeup needed, especially after being up 3-0 and then losing, you know, four straight to a team that we should have never have lost to, and you always look to your leaders, and we certainly look at, you know, our all of our top players, not just Joe and not just Patrick, but all of our top players as a whole. And when you have one goal and two assists and collectively a minus 29 in your final four games, you know, you have to start looking to shake things up a little bit. And I don't think this is to put all the onus on Joe or even Patrick for that matter. But there's definitely, leadership that has to be found somewhere within. And if it's not Joe and if it's not Patrick, then we're looking for somebody else to step forward. And I think that's the main reason that we're doing what we're doing is we're waiting for somebody now to step forward and take charge of this team.
Larry Robinson speaking on TSN 690, our affiliate in Montreal. That was from yesterday.
Pretty strong words there, by the way. Especially referencing the minus numbers from those last four games.
A team we should never have lost to in the Los Angeles Kings. I mean,
well, and I think he's basing that on the fact that they were up 3-0.
Yeah. I agree.
But this is a huge blow to Joe Thornton. I mean, that's got to be a huge blow. And I'm not talking a blow to his ego. I'm talking about just his place on this team. And I think that, you know, we're going to have David Pollock coming up right away in 10 minutes or so. But you look at how this has gone down. And by the way, not major changes did not happen. I mean, Todd McClellan is still there. Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, the two guys that have been with this team for a really long time, especially Marleau, has been there for about 15 years now, I think.
Sure.
You know, this team is essentially exactly the same. And we were expecting there to be major moves. And I think that if we're in the same position talking about this, I think next April or May, right around where the playoffs are, and if the San Jose Sharks are not going to be going far. I mean, this is a really good hockey team, the San Jose Sharks. And I think, you know, there are some concerns filling the void left by a guy like Dan Boyle. But, I mean, Marc-Edouard Vlasic and Jason Demers, who they recently signed. I mean, they've still got a good group of defense there. But what I'm saying is I don't know if they're still quite at that level of the LA Kings. Well, even if they played the series again, I don't know that if the result would be different. But
I think if they play the series again, I think it was an anomaly that the Sharks were up 3-0 to begin with.
Exactly. The Kings really played poorly in the especially the first games on the road. But as far as this goes, I mean, when you're talking about the locker room, and by the way, in the article that David Pollack wrote for the San Jose Mercury News, he was talking about how Joe Thornton didn't even know, and then he found out. I mean, yeah. if that's
the way they went about it was lousy. The media had to be the ones to inform Joe Thornton that
it's ugly,
was,
Drew.
It's silly, is what it is. I mean, here's my theory, and we'll talk again. Like you said, we'll talk to David about this coming up next segment. If the off season is for preparation and doing the necessary work to put your team in the best position to succeed when the regular season begins. And I mean, I think that's more or less what the offseason is for, both organizationally in terms of strategizing and retooling the organization and changing the roster to improve it and make it better equipped to compete for the Stanley Cup for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And players, they are doing their best to get their bodies ready to handle the grind of an 82-game NHL season. You cannot tell me that this offseason for the San Jose Sharks has left the team in a better position to win next year than at the end of last year. This entire organization and team, from the roster to the head coach to everything in between, just seems like it's dysfunctional right now.
Right, but going back to you know we were talking about this past summer, especially the last, you know, 6 weeks or so, about how the Winnipeg Jets didn't make very many moves. Look at the San Jose Sharks. They didn't make a lot of moves either. They lost Dan Boyle. They didn't bring anybody else. I mean, they signed John Scott. They brought him in. But as far as major moves, they didn't bring anybody in. So you're looking at the exact same team as last year, and that team that had an epic collapse. Now, I think that furthers your point.
Yeah.
Should we expect? I think we'd all expect San Jose to make the playoffs. They're still a playoff team. They always get into the playoffs. They're excellent if you look at them in each area. But this team doesn't. This team's goal and where they are in their trajectory as a team, they're not just trying to get into the playoffs. I mean, this is a team that wants to win. They haven't won a Stanley Cup since the franchise was created. So, I mean, this is a team that they want to go to the next level. Now, to me, what's complicating things is that towards the end of the regular season, not complicating things, but which is, I mean, makes it even more curious, is that Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton were signed to 3-year contracts towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
So now you're in a position where Marleau's already had the C taken away from him, given to Joe Thornton.
That was done, what, about 4 or 5 years ago at this point in time?
Yeah. And now you have Joe Thornton, who's the season been taken away from him, and I would expect Logan Couture to be the next captain of the San Jose Sharks, or Joe Pavelski.
I would agree with you. And I don't necessarily object to removing the captaincy from Joe Thornton, because you need to make that transition for the team away from it being Joe Thornton's team to Logan Couture's team. But the method in which they've gone about this is so atrocious.
And you're doing it like in the middle of August, and you're not telling him, and he has to find out from a reporter.
And they've been playing footsie all offseason, the Sharks and Thornton, about the possibility of a trade. In that, you know, Thornton comes out and he's like, well, I don't want to trade.
His brother, who's his agent.
His brother's his agent. I don't want to trade away from San Jose. But if the fans tell me that they think that the organization should maybe trade me, if the sun is at the 92nd degree angle parallel to the universe on a Friday at 2:30 in the afternoon, then maybe at that point in time I would consider a trade if the fans requested it in writing.
I think he absolutely wants out of there, by the way, Drew. I think there's no question in my mind he wants out of there. And I think that he's been there now for, what is it, 7 years, 8 years since coming over from Boston.
Sure.
And he's had a lot of success there, but not playoff success. And I think Joe Thornton is now 34 years old. He's looking at his career and he's saying, okay, I've got 3 years left on my current contract. And those are going to be, you know, if they're not my last 3 years, they're probably going to be my most productive 3 years. He might sign another contract.
Well, they're not going to be his most productive three years.
I mean, of the remaining years in his career.
Right. Sorry.
So I think he's looking at this, and you know, we were talking about this a little bit towards the free agency period. We thought there might be a fit for him in Chicago to be the second line center there. And I know Richie was getting upset that, you know, he was going to be kind of tagging onto a team that's already an established team. But I mean, I think there's a lot of teams, Drew, that would take Joe Thornton still at this point in his career. And I think the question is, what are you going to give up? And his contract, does it fit in? Because as we know, for example...
Look, I mean, Joe Thornton's
a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, you don't think they want Joe Thornton?
Of course. I'm not. This isn't about Joe Thornton's on-ice skill. He still got 76 points last year. He's still one of the best playmakers in the league. He
absolutely.
65 assists.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is Joe Thornton. He's a fantastic hockey player. It's just about the relationship between the organization and the player. And this back and forth.
I think he's on borrowed time there. I don't think he... Do you think... Let me ask you a question. Do you think he plays the next 3 years in San Jose? I think the chances of that are very, very low.
I think he plays...
I don't see him staying there.
Well, you know, it's a good question, Izzy, because, look, the Sharks still have a ton of talent. And that even if there's dysfunction, they're still going to be a good team and they should still make the playoffs. But... You know, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup because I don't think they're good enough at that point. And I think everybody's a year older and...
You hope wiser?
No, I don't know that they are wiser because they're not handling the situation. They're not handling what happened against Los Angeles last year well enough to give me any indication that they're doing this in a smart manner. They're sort of quietly fight. It's like a cold war between the player and the organization with no resolution, and the season's going to be upon us in a month, 6 weeks, and I don't see how this is beneficial to the team whatsoever in their goal to get past the first or the second round.
I think the only thing that makes this relationship good and the only way that Joe Thornton stays there for the next 3 years is if they have success in the playoffs, ultimate success, if whether that's going to the Stanley Cup Finals, hopefully winning the Stanley Cup for San Jose, because I look at Joe Thornton as a player, he's never won a Stanley Cup.
Well, the success for the San Jose Sharks at this point in time is winning a series you're supposed to win, which they haven't done in a number of years, where they've been the better of the teams on the ice, either in the first or the second round, and for whatever reason, they end up losing. Let's go to break. When we come back, David Pollock, the San Jose Mercury News, joins us to continue this conversation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, the 23rd of August here in Winnipeg on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, waking up nice and early for us on the West Coast from the San Jose Mercury News, David Pollock. David, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, Drew.
David, we were just talking about this last segment, and I made the point that, you know, if the offseason is for preparation and for putting the team and the player in the best position to succeed for the coming NHL season, it seems like the San Jose Sharks are failing in that duty given this offseason of, I don't want to say controversy, but, you know, sort of controversy in their relationship between Joe Thornton and the team. The news breaks earlier this week that they've stripped Joe Thornton of the captaincy. Is this team, you know, better off today than they were at the end of last season when they lost to the Los Angeles Kings after being up 3-0?
Well, better off a hard term to define, I think, in this case, because they were at such a low point when they dropped that series to the Kings after winning those first 3 games. That was about as low as I've ever... It is as low as I've ever seen this franchise, no doubt about it. There was nobody trying to sugarcoat anything. They were beating themselves up pretty hard. Have things improved since then? Probably a little. But is the situation a healthy one here? That's a reasonable question. I think there are still some unresolved issues, let's put it that way. And I think part of the goal might have been to get things stirred up to the point where people come to camp with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. But how that plays itself out, I think, is going to be the curious thing to see right now.
You know, obviously the organization is welcome to strip Joe Thornton of his captaincy if they wanted to, and they decided to go that route. How did they manage to screw up doing that by not informing him ahead of time? Or was that done?
Yeah, I think, let me qualify a few there, clarify a few things, and I'll do this from the Sharks' perspective. I asked directly, so you're stripping Thornton of the captaincy? And the answer I got was from, and this was Todd McClellan talking, no, we're not stripping him of the captaincy. We are basically taking letters away from everybody. They come to camp with a clean slate, and Joe could be the one who earns the C at the end of the day. Now, that's, you know, we can go back and forth on what that means as far as stripping goes. But it's a dicey situation here. I don't think Joe was shocked by the phone. You know, he and I, we exchanged texts for a little bit. I don't think he was shocked by what I was telling him about what we were told about losing the C and the A. I think he saw it coming. But he did have a conversation that day with Todd McClellan, and the phrase clean slate was used. But when I talked with Todd afterward, he kind of fell on the sword a little bit. He took the responsibility. He could have pointed it back to Thornton and said, who's he kidding? But Todd, he manned up and said, maybe I wasn't clear enough in my communication. But I don't think it was a case where that hit Joe Thornton out of the blue. I think, you know, because in our communication, he said, you know, when I first raised the subject, he goes, wasn't this a thing 2 or 3 months ago? And I said, well, it was a lot of speculation 2 or 3 months ago, but it wasn't confirmed, and so that's why we were back at it again.
David, how bad is this relationship between Joe Thornton and the team? You know, we mentioned that he wasn't fully informed of being stripped of the captaincy, but when you read the comments that his brother John made, his agent, what are the chances that he ends up playing out the 3 years of his contract that he just signed this past season?
It's a great question. Joe, again, insists he is not good, does not want to go anywhere else. He wants to play hockey in San Jose. He wants to win the Stanley Cup in San Jose. He thinks the players are here to do it. He's got the control right now. He's got a contract, and as far as I can tell, and no one's quarreled with this, there's no wiggle room for the Sharks. There's no, at a certain point, you give us three teams, we can trade you two kind of language. So it's really Joe, you know, Joe will be here if he wants to be here, and how that plays out, you know, and nobody really knows right now. I can tell you a lot of people thought when they're talking about a different role for Thornton or a different role for Marlowe, that doesn't mean these guys are going to the fourth line. The Sharks have kind of made it clear they value the talent that's there, and they want to win hockey games, so they're not going to do anything foolish by, you know, punishing somebody by reducing ice time to 5 or 6 minutes a game.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News. David, you mentioned the clean slate, and Joe Thornton conceivably could regain his captaincy depending on what happens at training camp. Is this really Logan Couture's captaincy to lose from now until the start of the regular season?
He is sort of that generation of players here. He is the more outspoken. He's the one you can see facing responsibilities like that. And I only say that because Mark Edward Vlasic and Joe Pavelski are a little bit more reserved in their comments, and I'm not suggesting they don't have the leadership skills. But if you're looking for an outside vote, you know, who the betting favorite is right now, it would be Couture. I'm not saying that's going to play out that way, but he would seem to be the one who possesses some of the more outspoken qualities that some teams might be looking for in a captain.
David, we were talking about this last segment before we had you on. The San Jose Sharks didn't make a whole lot of moves, and I think the last time that we had you on was before free agency, and we were talking to you about some of the moves that might come. Todd McClellan is obviously still there. Doug Wilson is still there. And as we mentioned, the veterans and the young players that have led to a lot of success at the San Jose Sharks are still there. So I guess what makes you think that this team's any better and next year, this coming year, I should say, are they going to have a better chance at having more playoff success?
What they are telling you is that the fact they are going to go younger this year, when Doug Wilson got some attention a few months ago also by calling the Sharks a tomorrow team, and when I hear tomorrow team, that's a team that's a couple years away from taking a serious playoff run.
Yep.
Try to backpedal and clarify that a little bit. By a tomorrow team, they're just talking about a team that focuses more on younger players. They aren't going to bring guys in their 30s in at the deadline to try to get over the hump. They're going to give their own guys the opportunity. They think they've got players in the system who can make that difference. They're not saying they're going to be a better team right now, but they're also not saying they're taking steps back. That they still have expectations of being in the playoffs and doing some damage there.
David Pollock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. David, when you look at the Sharks off season, again, you know, obviously the tremendous disappointment in how last year ended, losing to the Los Angeles Kings. Yet they didn't do much in terms of shaking up the roster. They were pretty quiet when it came to free agency, unrestricted free agency in the NHL. Brent Burns moves from the defense to back to being a forward as a winger. They lose Dan Boyle. Who's going to fill Dan Boyle's position and fill those minutes for the Sharks on the back end?
Actually, I don't mean to correct you over the air here, but they're moving Brent Burns back to the blue line.
I misspoke there. You're absolutely
right. I think he's played so many positions, David, that Drew just gets confused.
That's totally understandable. He goes back and forth.
Let me rephrase the question then. Can Brent Burns fill Dan Boyle's position there? That's a better question.
Probably the better question. And, you know, it kind of remains to be seen how Brent Burns plays on defense in the Shark system, because the fact that he had some struggles when he first came to the team is what prompted, in part at least, Todd to put him up front, and he had a lot of success there for a while. Hit a cold patch last year, so it's not like out of the question that the Sharks are moving him back to the blue line. They kind of see him valuable in either place and go with where the greater need is. And the greater need is at defense, again, without Dan Boyle's minutes. They also like the guys, you know, the guys they have relied on the last couple of years, guys like Justin Braun and Matt Irwin, to take the next step up and pick up some of those minutes and some of the responsibilities that Dan Boyle had. And they think they've got a future NHL top four guy in Mirko Mueller, their 2013 first round draft pick, who might be ready to make the leap right to the NHL from a full year at now that he's out of the WHL.
David, we read this earlier in the San Jose Mercury News. Rafi Torres, who had all types of injury problems last year, he might end up missing half of the season. I guess, can you provide a little bit more information on that injury? And maybe are the San Jose Sharks maybe looking at signing someone now to replace Rafi Torres, knowing that he's going to be out a few months at least at the beginning of the season with that knee injury?
I'll answer the last part first when it comes to replacing Rafi. I think they think they've got players in their system who can step up. That's a guy, Uriah Hayes, a big player, and had a little bit of success up here. Older guy, 25, 26, but had some success up here last year. He can play a big physical game, and he might be the one who gets a shot at that. They also signed Ty McGinn from Philadelphia in the offseason, and they think his game might fit into that role. The situation with Rafi's injury, we only learned this week the extent of everything. When he came back in February last year after missing 59 games, I think it was, he played 5 out of 6 games and then missed the next 17, and all they would say was a lower body injury. We all thought it was related to the knee that had been repaired. What they're telling us now is that there was an infection in that knee, and they did what they could to reduce the problem with it, all with antibiotics and the way you go through all the things you do. And infections after surgery are obviously very serious things. And so there must have been a lot of concerns, too. He came back for the playoffs, kept telling us he was playing through a lot of pain, and it turns out that, again, was all tied to most likely the infection that he was dealing with. They've tried in the offseason to clean up the infection. They had finally decided they needed to basically remove the ACL tissue that they grafted in there a year ago, and he is back at square one right now. We'll have another surgical repair job on the ACL, and theoretically, at least, this one won't have the same problems that followed that one.
David, we'll let you go on this final question. We've talked about the forward group. We've talked about the defense. Goaltending in San Jose, it was obviously a problem like everything else was in the last four games of the series against the Kings. They come back again with Niemi and Stalock as their goaltending duo. Do they have enough confidence? Is the goaltending behind the defense going to be enough for this team to really do anything besides just get into the playoffs?
They're hoping Niemi can rebound from what obviously was a step backward last year for him. But the way they're also telling it all comes back to this whole everybody goes to camp with a clean slate. Nobody has any equity built up from what they've done in the past. They're both same faces are going to be there, but they have left wide open the who's number one and who's number two and how many games each are going to get this season. That will be determined in camp. They think they've got the personnel. They're just going to probably deploy them a little differently.
sounds like it's going to be an interesting start to the year and entire season in San Jose. David Paul covers the Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. David, thanks very much for doing this morning.
You're welcome.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, David.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News for joining us to talk about the San Jose Sharks and their curious offseason. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the show in its entirety, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to you each and every week. You can also find it on TSN1290.ca and on our fine website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And remember, September 1st through 7th at Bernstein's Deli, Le Burger Week. So they're going to be presenting a special hamburger in honor of...
It's put on by Charcoal Collaborative, I believe.
I don't really know about the history, but Le Burger Week, they're an active participant.
Yep.
So go to Bernstein's and check out what their head chef has made for a fantastic burger.
Yeah,
I'm going to go every day and have the same burger seven days.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is going to be amazing. Yeah. We're going to be able to eat not only the regular goods that they have at Bernstein's Deli, but we're going to be... I've already gotten a sneak peek. I always get a sneak peek at all of the new menu items. I happen to be close personal friends with Aaron Bernstein, so he always shows
me. You also
me.
Live around the corner.
And I live around the corner, so I basically just have an underground tunnel to Bernstein's Deli.
I thought they just had a catapult on the roof of their building, that it could just catapult a burger into your
they
backyard.
They just launch it, and then I go outside and just open up my mouth.
Right. And then, that's what I thought.
Oh, and also, we got to mention, too, we've been talking about this for 2 weeks now. I think coming up, and it's either going to be 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, maybe 4 weeks. We'll see what happens. But
first week of October is what I'm hearing.
What we're going to do is we're talking to Legal Curve Sandwich, the return.
Right.
What we're going to do is we're going to test a couple out on air before it's released. So we'll do that sometime in early September, mid-September, and then it'll be available probably early October.
Right for the start of the regular season.
Yeah. So that's kind of our idea, and we're excited about that because, as we know, we're fueled by deli meat.
Yes, fueled by deli meat, indeed. Yeah. Earlier this week, this is probably one of my favorite clips, you know, of all time. And this is Alex Kovalev, former NHL player, former Montreal Canadian, former New York Ranger, former Pittsburgh Penguin.
Yep.
Did I miss any other teams? I'm sure I did. He bounced around a bit there.
I think you got all of them.
Did I get them all? Just three?
Pittsburgh,
New York,
Montreal.
Ottawa. Timmy
Good
says
call,
Ottawa.
Timmy.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, the Ottawa, by the way, his time in Ottawa was pretty negligible.
My defining memory of Alex Kovalev is getting love tapped on the wrist in overtime against Boston, dropping his stick and reacting like he was shot, not getting the penalty call in the Bruins scoring.
What about way back in the day in the mid-90s? Against the Quebec Nordiques when he was at the Rangers, if you remember that, and he fell pretty hard too. I don't know if that's going
way
back.
Was it an overtime of the playoffs, though?
I think it was.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's the defining moment that I remember. Alex Kovalev had some interesting words on P.K. Subban, newly signed defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. Here's Alex Kovalev on P.K. Subban.
I don't understand, how... You know, these days they get in contract. You know, old days, I know there's different lifestyle, different times. You know, if you go back to, 70s, they weren't making the big contracts either. And they probably, felt the same way about us when we came into the league and started making this big money. Now it's the same thing for us. He's risky defenseman and he's a wide open defenseman. He can, for example, why I'm saying that he can give up five goals, he can score five goals, but the score is going to be 0-0. So, if he, for example, save five goals and then score five goals, that's a different style of hockey. He's not making the right decisions. You know, he's not the guy that he's taking the risky plays, but he's not making the right decisions sometimes. He just plays like we used to play on the street, street hockey. Maybe because he won the best defenseman of the year, that's how they got paid these days. You know, if you got, rookie of the year or best player of the year, you know, you get the contract right away, big contract. I don't know. But for his game, I don't understand why he gets so much money.
You know, I forget that Alex Kovalev was, a defensive forward, apparently. Who wasn't also a risky player, and he was apparently a shutdown defensive forward multiple times, Selke winner. I don't think I must have missed out on that memo from Alex Kovalev. By the way, he also played for the Florida Panthers.
I looked that up, yeah. And I'm on Cap Geek right now. I'm looking up Alexei Kovalev's, how much money he made. He made $54 million over his NHL career. That's according to Cap Geek. And he made $5 million a year from 2009 to 2011 with the Ottawa Senators and Pittsburgh Penguins. And you know what, Alex? In the 74 games in 2010-11, when you were making $5 million and you got 34 points,
yeah.
I think you could make a strong argument that you were getting overpaid at the same time to make $5 million to be a 30-point player. So it's funny that Alex Kovalev, now he's been out of the NHL now for, over a year, his last team being the Florida Panthers, as you mentioned. He's criticizing P.K. Subban. P.K. Subban has a Norris Trophy. He just won a gold medal with the Canadian Olympic team. Like, I don't know why people at this point are being critical. I mean, P.K. Subban makes a lot of money. He got a very rich contract. And to be honest with you, based on what other players make, I think he deserves it. And sure, does he overcommit? And does he probably need to improve defensively in certain regards? Yes. But again, he has a Norris Trophy. He was one of the 8 defensemen picked to the Canadian Olympic team. He's the MVP. Well, again, and this is not a slight to Carey Price at all, because Carey Price is one of the best goaltenders in the league. I think P.K. Subban is the MVP of that team.
Yeah.
And I don't think you get a lot of arguments from the Montreal Canadiens about his worth to that team. And it's just, to me, it's funny that Alexei Kovalev uses the money as a reason to criticize him, when Alexei Kovalev was getting paid a lot of money with the Montreal Canadiens. And
there's a lot of teams that could have filed the criminal charges against Alexei Kovalev for, taking nights off and stealing money. And like you said, that last year in Ottawa, when he got 34 points in 72 games,
yeah,
or whatever
it was, with Pittsburgh too.
Pittsburgh
after,
and
yeah.
Ottawa, right? Yeah. Made the trade there.
Well, no, I mean, he was a floater. Let's be honest. Alexei Kovalev, at one point, Gretzky was calling him one of the most skilled players he's ever seen. You remember that?
Sure.
This is talking 20 years ago. And, I mean, he had a great career. I mean, Alexei Kovalev played over 1,000 games, had over 1,000 points. He was a point-per-game player, essentially. But I don't think anyone's going to remember Alexei Kovalev as being a great two-way player in the vein as a Jonathan Toews or an Andrei Kopitar, players of that ilk. I think he was a one-dimensional player.
Yeah.
And he's criticizing P.K. Subban for being one-dimensional, which, by the way, I don't agree with. I think P.K. Subban has developed way better as a defensive defenseman. I think I'm not sure what his motives here are or where this is coming from, but I think it's a little misguided.
I'll tell you what, work ethic and Alexei Kovalev were never two words that went very well together. This is a guy who, lots of games he would take off. He was never, the word dog, I'm sure, had been used to describe him on more than one occasion. When he wanted to play, he was terrific. But there were plenty of games where he decided that, I'm not into this one. I'm going to just, stand over here and be a relatively inconsequential.
Well, Alexei Kovalev, again, is one of those players that you can't take away how good of an offensive player. I mean, the guy was a great goal scorer. But again, was he a player that you would say, we need him to complement our team and be a great... I mean, he had success. He absolutely had success in the NHL. So, you have to give that to him. But I don't think anyone was ever going to confuse him. Let's put it this way. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's one of the greatest players of all time. He's a great player, had a great career. But towards those end years in Montreal and Ottawa, when he was getting paid a lot of money and those teams were expecting him to really put them over the top, I don't think he did that. And I think that, again, I don't agree with those comments. I think P.K. Subban's a great player, and I think he deserves the contract that he got.
I agree with you on this one. I found that entire clip to be very entertaining. It's rare that you get consensus in this room among me, you, and Richard, when Richard's here, of course.
Yeah.
But we all agreed that we didn't understand that, P.K. Subban at, the $9 million average annual value that he's getting, given the salary cap that's going to go up and everything else, we thought that, yeah, PK Subban at $9 million for the next 8 years, none of us are going to, the Canadians are not going to regret that at any point in time as long as he stays healthy. Alex Kovalev, I mean...
Those comments are just so...
Glass houses, Alex.
Oh,
come on, buddy.
It's unbelievable. You hear those comments, and I know that made a huge... there was a huge uproar in the hockey world over those comments. Sometimes you just scratch your head and you say, okay, Alex.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. People are really agreeing with you there in Montreal. It's almost like he was kind of getting back at the Montreal fans, because towards the end of his time there in Montreal, he was there for 4 years. He wasn't a fan favorite.
I can vividly remember that overtime game against Boston where he got tapped on the wrist and went down and gave up the puck and dropped his stick and didn't get the call because, I mean, whether or not it should have been a penalty, I think, is somewhat irrelevant.
He should have kept playing, though.
His overreaction was ridiculous, and the puck ends up in the back of the net. I think the Habs ended up winning the series, so it didn't end up costing them in the series. But that game, I mean, oh, my God, that's your career. That's your legacy, Alex Kovalev. And, you know, to go out and be blasting on PK Subban as he did this week was pretty entertaining. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about a lawsuit that was settled, or maybe it wasn't. And I really don't know where it's at right now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You know, Ezzy, there's a Yiddish word. It's called chutzpah, which translates to nerve. Richie, not here, enjoying a vacation, is sending you messages in the show demanding, even though he's not here, that we play Bruce Springsteen to wrap up the show.
He's a little bit
of chutzpah, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, he didn't ask, but, you know, I told Timmy, let's play a little Bruce for Richie, because he's the biggest Bruce fan there is out there, so we made sure we got the Bruce in.
Exactly right. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Earlier this week, we all know that the Todd Bertuzzi and Steve Moore case, which has been 10 years in the making and has been winding its way through the courts, and as you know, the justice world moves very slowly, the legal world. We had heard that there was an agreement, a settlement. And then we heard that there wasn't. And now today, Saturday morning at 10 to 11 in the morning, I really don't know if there is a settlement or if there's not. Here is Rick Westhead, TSN senior correspondent, on Todd Bertuzzi and Steve Moore and the settlement speculation.
Todd Bertuzzi's lawyer, Jeff Adair, told some reporters that he'd reached a settlement. I spoke to him around noon. And I said, how does Todd feeling? And he said, Todd's feeling terrific. He's pleased to be able to put this behind him. And I asked him point blank, is there a legal agreement? Is there a contractual agreement that this is settled? And he paused and he said, you know, if you'd asked me that question 10 minutes ago, I would have said yes. But I just got a disconcerting, his word, disconcerting email. And I'm wondering whether there's a problem here. He subsequently told a few other reporters that there could be a problem, too. So, of course, that gets you wondering, well, what could this problem possibly be about? Mm-hmm. I reached out to a few lawyers who specialize in these types of cases. They gave me a couple of really good examples. One, they could have agreed to terms on the money. You know, Moore was demanding $68 million. So, you know, maybe they were able to agree on a lower number of $20, $30 million, whatever that might be. But maybe they couldn't agree on terms about the confidentiality agreement. Or it's, you know, completely possible that at the last second that Bertuzzi's lawyer said, well, we want to take a portion of that award and we want to put that away in a trust fund. And in 5 years' time, if you're still sick and you still can't work, you get the money. Gotcha. But if you can, if you're going back to work, then we keep that. So, I mean, that's speculation, but it's speculation from a lawyer, like I said, who specializes in civil litigation, particularly in sports.
Rick Westhead, TSN on, I believe that was our affiliate in Toronto, TSN 1050, speaking about the Bertuzzi-Moore settlement speculation. You know, it's really a weird week. You hear that it's done, and then you hear that it's not done, and really you haven't heard anything at all from Steve Moore's camp. So all the people saying that it's done have been Todd Bertuzzi's representatives and have been the Vancouver Canucks representatives, and I believe Bill Daly also said something along those lines. But there's still nothing official on this, so this could conceivably fall apart. Hard to believe that it would when it seems like they've gone this far down the line. But, you know, we still don't know what's happening with this situation, and we don't know, you know, what the holdup seems to be. And they speculated, could it be a non-disclosure agreement? Could it be the actual dollars and cents? I don't know. He was asking for a lot of money, and we just don't know yet what he's going to get, if we'll ever know.
I'm not sure. It's absolutely confusing, and there's so much uncertainty about this. But to me, I'm trying to figure out what the motives are, or not, maybe not motives, but why there seems to be this misinformation. If there is a deal in place, or if there isn't a deal in place, it seems like something, we're not being told something. I don't know if that's how you read it, but I feel like, well, obviously there's a lot we're not being told. We're not privy to what's going on in the courts, but it seems like there's something here that's being played out in the media. To me, it seems fishy that one side is saying we've reached a binding agreement in court and the other side is saying, no, we don't.
Well, here's Mark Moore. Mark Moore is Steve Moore's brother.
Right.
And he, you know, this is what he told TSN. He said, and I quote, "I got a text message from Steve last night and he's very concerned. He says there is no deal yet and isn't sure what to do about all the media speculation." Mark Moore said his mother and Steve's legal team believed Bertuzzi's legal advisors are trying to ratchet up the pressure on Moore to reach a settlement this month. Now,
see,
maybe
that's
true.
That's what we're not being told, or we don't know. To me, it Bertuzzi's lawyer is saying they have an agreement, and then the other side isn't. So are they?
And the
using
Canucks
that?
Are also saying that they have an agreement as well. This is the statement from the Vancouver Canucks. Right. Let me just pull it up here.
So is a negotiating ploy on their on the Bertuzzi side, or is it the Steve Moore side that's using it as a negotiating ploy? I don't know.
Here's the statement from the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks Sports and Entertainment confirms that a mutually agreeable and confidential settlement of the action commenced by Steve Moore against Todd Bertuzzi and the Vancouver Canucks has been reached. The settlement is a result of mediation sessions with former Ontario Chief Justice Warren Winkler. No further details will be disclosed, and the Canucks respectfully decline requests for comment. So the Canucks say there's a deal. Bertuzzi's people say there's a deal. But really, they can say what they want. And until Steve Moore's people say there's a deal, there is no deal.
Well, and we don't really know. The only really real, I guess, player in this that it really matters is if the court thinks it's a deal, and right, and so
sure.
Till the judge makes the decision, and because it's a civil suit, but you know the reality of this situation is, Drew, this happened 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's a long time ago, and Steve Moore, what happened to Steve Moore was unfortunate. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. His hockey career was ended. He suffered all types of physical and emotional damage. At this point, and I don't think, you know, I'm being wrong when I say this, is people at this point of this story want to know how much money he's getting.
Yeah.
That's all people want to know. People want to know the number. So I mean, you know, we heard you mentioned the non-disclosure agreement, meaning that the decision's going to be confidential. I think that's going to apply regardless.
Well,
I don't think we're ever going to really find out the true number. He was asking for $68 million, which, by the way, seems like an astronomical amount of money.
Sure.
And again, I'm not a lawyer. And I don't play one on TV.
Right.
Or radio. And I have no idea where that number comes from. So, I mean, if it's 68, 48, 28, I don't know what's fair. I mean, the guy, I mean, his career was completely cut short. But to me, that's, I mean, am I wrong? As human beings, not just as sports fans, essentially we want to know what that number is so we can move on. Because,
yeah,
I mean, he's got to move on with his life.
Well,
I mean, this happened 10 years ago, and I realize he's still feeling the effects.
That could be part of the agreement. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, look, if the Canucks and Bertuzzi and the NHL are willing to write him a check, I'm sure they don't really want to write that check, but if they have to write it, I'm sure they want it so that it's never disclosed to the public, a non-disclosure agreement.
Yep.
I think Moore might be saying, no, I want you to know how much, you know, your actions are going to cost you, because this is how much I'm going to get paid for it. I have no idea. It's very bizarre, though, that you have two sides saying there's a deal done.
Well, even if you throw in the Canucks, there's really three sides, sure, or three parties.
But even though those three parties are all on one side of the street, they're right, all on the same side.
Right.
And you have this other side saying there's no deal yet, you know. I don't think this is the last we've heard of this story.
No, it's absolutely
not. Until we hear from Steve Moore and his lawyer, Ted Danson, this is not the last we've heard of the story whatsoever.
Well, Drew, Todd Bertuzzi's unsigned right now. The Detroit Red Wings didn't give him a contract, so he's still an unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. I think there's a chance that he's played his last NHL game. It's unfortunately hasn't been a very good summer for him, but you could argue it hasn't been a good 10 years for Steve Moore.
That's well said, Ezzy.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezzy, do you have anything?
Oh, absolutely. I'm cheering producer Tim. If you don't follow him on Instagram, you should follow him on Instagram. He did a great ALS ice bucket challenge, as we all have. I saw you did it, Drew, last weekend.
Yeah.
Richie did it out in Lake of the Woods at Dogtooth Lake Resort. Shout out to them, by the way. It was a lot of fun there at Lake of the Woods. Timmy did a great one, and I'm going to see the video after the show, the picture. Basically, what Timmy did for his ice bucket challenge, we'll get Timmy on here really quickly if we have time. He actually got a Zamboni to dump ice on him, so... I thought that was very creative and hilarious, and there's pictures of it on Instagram if you have a chance to check it out. And so I'm cheering Timmy. That was a good job there.
Attaboy. I'm going to, of course, echo that cheer, but I'm also going to give a shout-out to Andrew Collier, Rick Forney, the entire Winnipeg Gold Eyes. They clinched a playoff spot last night. They won with their sweep of the doubleheader, so there's going to be playoff baseball here in Winnipeg. Looks like September 3rd and 4th. So shout-out to our friends at the Gold Eyes for making the making the playoffs for yet another year, as this perennially competitive organization seems to do year in and year out. So shout-out to them.
Go support
for
the
that.
Fish, man.
That's it for this Saturday and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Big thank you to David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News for joining us. In case you missed any of that or the show in its entirety, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Search for the show on iTunes, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Timmy and for producer Remus, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball this afternoon on TSN 1290.
Been listening to The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph Podcast. Catch The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph live weekdays at 11 a.m. on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.